Would you be offended if I told you that you probably have at least a little bit of narcissism in your personality? It's actually the truth. See, every single one of us has some amount of narcissism.
Narcissist or just traumatized and immature? How can you tell the difference between those?
At its most basic level, narcissism is just simple self-interest. So the fact that you woke up this morning, maybe got dressed, fed yourself, that kind of stuff, all an indication of narcissism. Getting your hair done or wearing outfits that you love could also be considered narcissistic. Thinking you're attractive or smart or in any way a good person, narcissism. But there's a difference between someone who cares about themselves and someone who is what we would call a malignant narcissist.
One of the biggest and most important things to recognize about narcissists is empathy. They don't have it. If your ex was able to show you true, genuine empathy in a moment when it didn't benefit them to do so, then there is a chance that you're not dealing with a narcissist.
So let's talk about that. Healthy versus unhealthy narcissism. One of the biggest things people ask me when they first find my videos, my articles, my books, my podcasts, whatever, is, but isn't everyone a narcissist? My answer is always yes, but there's more to it than that. There's such a thing as healthy narcissism, and then there's what we call malignant or toxic narcissism. Whether it's due to our culture, our technology, our parents, or some other cause, a larger percentage of narcissists seem to be coming out of the woodwork lately. Some people are even calling it an epidemic.
There's a whole spectrum of narcissism. It begins with a sort of healthy kind of narcissism that looks a whole lot like self-love and coexists with empathy. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the most extreme narcissists, the very toxic people who have a tendency to ruin relationships, ruin lives.
These people might have narcissistic personality disorder. So what's that?
At its most basic level, a disorder where people have a really inflated sense of self-importance. The cause is officially unknown, but most researchers, doctors, scientists say that it probably involves a combination of nature and nurture, or environmental factors and genetic factors. The disorder does need to be diagnosed by a professional. Most of the time, people with narcissistic personality disorder won't be diagnosed unless they happen to be forced into therapy for legal reasons or by a spouse or loved one who threatens to go away if they don't do the therapy.
A lot of times, people who would be diagnosed with NPD or narcissistic personality disorder are never diagnosed. That's because a lot of times those same people think there's nothing wrong with them. It's kind of part of the whole disorder, right? And as we've discussed here on this channel many times, we can see some very predictable patterns among them. With that being said, there are so many different ways that these particular patterns and toxic behaviors can manifest themselves in a single individual person. So it might seem pretty logical to assume that all narcissists are alike because their behaviors are so similar, or at least it can seem that way. Because of this, sometimes even the best trained eyes can miss a narcissist. And that's because of the fact that there are so many various personality types within the spectrum of narcissistic personality disorder, or even just the spectrum of narcissism.
Is there a narcissism epidemic? That's the question. As news and gossip around certain well-known narcissist types swirl through the media and our minds these days, you gotta wonder if maybe there is a narcissism epidemic, right? In any case, there does seem to be evidence that indicates an increase in narcissism in our society, and there are those who would argue that there's a certain amount of narcissism that's healthy for most people. Would you be totally shocked that I agree with them that there is a certain amount of narcissism that is actually necessary to survive and certainly thrive in the world these days? It's true. How do you know what's healthy when it comes to narcissism? What does healthy narcissism really look like? Well, it starts with self-esteem. It looks like loving or even just being okay with yourself and understanding that you do have value without the need for excessive outside validation. It means that you don't need people around you to be less than you in order to feel validated. It's being genuinely happy for the success or the happiness of someone else. And it's being able to admit it if you feel a little jealous of it. It's using those feelings to push you to inspiration and success rather than to feel insecure and threatened by it. But a healthy amount of narcissism looks a whole lot more like a dedication to your own happiness and success, along with the ability to empathize with and generally care for people, other people, and their feelings. And this next part is really important. Healthy narcissism must coexist with healthy empathy skills. That is exactly the difference between a toxic narcissist or a sociopath or a person with narcissistic personality disorder and a healthy person with a healthy amount of narcissism. In fact, I personally feel that compassionate empathy, or the lack thereof, is actually the tipping point between relatively healthy narcissism and malignant narcissism. When does it turn into malignant or toxic narcissism? Officially, a malignant narcissist is a person who has narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD, along along with other antisocial features, paranoid traits, and ego-driven aggression. They may also exhibit an absence of conscience, a psychological need for power, and an inflated sense of self-importance and entitlement. But here's the part that's really important here. It's that empathy thing again. See, when we say narcissists don't have any empathy, we don't actually mean that they're not capable of figuring out what you're feeling. What we actually mean is that narcissists don't feel empathy the same way the rest of us do. They don't have any compassion, they don't have any remorse, and they do not feel regret unless they regret a choice they made because it negatively affected them personally. So I guess what I'm saying is a narcissist cannot feel genuine empathy, and often, unless it benefits them directly, they don't even pretend to understand how you feel. Of course, when it suits them, they are more than happy to use the ability to read people in order to manipulate them. In fact, even in the cases where they appear to understand emotion, it's only to their benefit that they actually use that ability, only when and if it's required to get what they want from you. That is cognitive empathy. There's a big difference between the type of empathy that a narcissist displays and actual empathy. You understand? To clarify, in general, real empathy is the ability to sense, understand, and feel the emotions of someone else, even when you haven't had the same experience. Now, real empathy might also be cognitive, emotional, or compassionate empathy, but either way, real empathy means on some level, you are able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. You can sort of feel what they are feeling, or at least deeply understand it, even if you can't relate exactly to what they're going through, because you can sort of imagine how they might feel. You feel compassion for them, and you care about their feelings, and because of this, you act accordingly. False empathy, on the other hand, is used as a manipulation tactic by narcissists when they want something from you. As emotionally delayed as they are, narcissists are usually relatively intellectually inclined. They're no dummies, and so they're well aware that appearing to care about how you feel is going to help them get what they want from you. So they pretend to care how you feel, obviously. See, when it comes to narcissists, they are unable to actually get that emotional and compassionate empathy part. But at the same time, they're well aware of the fact that other people value empathy, and because of that, they might demonstrate false empathy. Yeah, this is exactly why it's so confusing and so difficult to detect a narcissist early in a relationship, especially if you're not an expert. So while not everyone using cognitive empathy is doing so in order to manipulate you, narcissists will definitely use it for that purpose. And since they don't feel compassionate or emotional empathy, it means nothing to them. And the narcissist is capable of understanding exactly what you think and feel, at least on a cognitive level, but not an emotional one. So literally, they can think about what you're feeling, but they don't feel emotionally affected by it, and it doesn't play a part in how they treat you. In fact, it probably plays a negative part. So malignant narcissists, they do not recognize your boundaries, and if they do, they just walk all over them. In fact, narcissists by nature are wired to do whatever is necessary to get what they want, and they do this in varying degrees of intensity, often pushing their victims to the point of emotional exhaustion, isolation, depression, and even various forms of PTSD. And then there are the physical symptoms involved with this kind of abuse, which we won't even dig into today. But if you'd like me to make a video on that, let me know in the comments below. Anywho, considering who these people are and how much they seem to need from the people closest to them, well, you won't be surprised to know that they are quite often attracted to their polar opposites for what I think are pretty obvious reasons. While a toxic narcissist will create excessive rules for you and then will enforce them even to their own detriment at times, they will also refuse to accept your own boundaries. And often, if you do have the nerve to try to express your boundaries to the narcissist directly, they will literally intentionally cross them simply because you ask them not to do that. It's one more way that they show you they're the boss. They're the one in control. Now, this might start off small in the beginning of your relationship. For example, let's say you have a new friend who might be a toxic narcissist. You tell them early in the relationship that you really prefer that they call before they just drop on by your house, right? Well, they do at first, but over time, there are these little drop-ins that you don't expect. I'm just dropping off that thing you borrowed from me that one time, they'll say. What's the big deal? Or they just happen to be in the neighborhood and they forgot to call. Do you mind making them a little something to eat while they're here? Then before you know it, they've got their own key and they stop by whenever they feel like it. You don't know how they got the key, but they complain if your house isn't completely company ready. They will slowly push your boundaries bit by bit until they completely obliterate them.
But please note that just like the rest of humanity, no two narcissists are exactly alike. And your narcissist, or the person you used to be connected to, may very well encompass more than one of these types. So the first type of narcissist on our list today is the know-it-all narcissist. While the know-it-all narcissist might really know a whole lot of stuff, this narcissist is also very pushy with his or her opinion. And of course, they're all too happy to shell that opinion out to anybody who will listen, and a lot of people who don't want to hear it. Whether they've been asked for it or not. This narcissist will lecture you all day long, and as long as you don't actually expect to have a two-way conversation, everything will be fine. But don't expect this narcissist to listen to you, because the whole time you're talking, they might be being quiet, but they're not actually listening. They're just trying to think about what they're going to say next. Next up, we have the daydream believer. This is the kind of narcissist who we might call a grandiose type of narcissist. That's because they'll almost always see themselves as someone who really matters more than other people. They figure they're more important somehow, and they expect other people to think so too. This narcissist will always exaggerate their own accomplishments, and they love to think that other people are envying them or even admiring them. They believe they are meant for something big. And if these qualities are combined with a certain amount of charisma and a strong sense of ambition, they might actually succeed on certain levels. And you might find yourself very drawn to this kind of narcissist. Next up, we have the seductor or the seductress. This is a very different kind of narcissist, but still very toxic. This is the kind of person who makes you feel amazing about yourself at first. They seem to admire you, even sort of idealize you. This person makes you feel like you're someone important, someone special who really matters. The dark side of this person is their intention behind this is to really seduce you into feeling that way about them. They know that when you love them and you depend on them a little bit, that you will support them. You'll grow to admire them. They will use blatant admiration, physical affection, and flattery to get what they want. But once you're no longer useful to them, they will drop you like a hot rock. Now let's talk about the bully. You know the bully, don't you? The kid that beat you up from down the street in third grade, or the one that was the mean girl from high school, or that jock everybody got wedgies from when they felt particularly asshole-y that day. As an adult, your bully might look like a regular person, but they need to elevate themselves by humiliating other people and making them feel bad about themselves. Sure, they might also be a daydream believer and a know-it-all, but there's something else too, a big jerk. Yeah, I said it. Big jerk. The bully will treat people around him or her with disdain, acting like they're so much better than the other people. Contempt when they don't get what they want. And the bully is not nice when they assert their superiority, which of course is as often as possible. They need you to feel bad about yourself because it's the only thing that helps them feel better about themselves. It's the only thing that helps their ridiculously low self-esteem feel a little bit less low, but they would never admit this even to themselves. Where the seductress might use intimacy and various charms to get what they want, the bully will push you, pressure you, and downright threaten you to get what they want. In extreme cases, the bully may threaten or actually use physical violence to get what they want, especially if you refuse to comply. They will relentlessly mock you, belittle you, to the point that you might even start thinking, I'm not worth the oxygen I'm allowed to breathe. They will do a number on your self-esteem. Now let's talk about the evil narcissist. This one is possibly the most dangerous type of narcissist. A bullying narcissist up to this point, of course, has been our worst, maybe the most toxic on the list. But now we've reached the pinnacle of all narcissists, and this is the one I'm calling the evil narcissist. It's the one that you should avoid at all costs. The evil narcissist is a whole other kind of animal. While they may have the qualities of a lot of these other types of narcissists, especially the bullying one, the evil narcissist will literally attempt to destroy you, especially if you pose some sort of threat to them, whether it's personal or otherwise. Maybe you made this person feel like you were challenging their superiority, or somehow that you're succeeding in a way that they're not. Or maybe they're just threatened by you for some weird reason that you don't understand. In any case, this person's dangerous. Even if you're never made aware of their feelings, they may proceed to methodically and intentionally ruin your life. They'll spread lies about you to everyone you know, smear campaigns. They might even attempt to cause trouble for you at work. And if you've been married and you have kids with this person, they'll do anything they can to turn the kids against you or to keep them from you, or they'll walk away without a second thought. Next up, we've got the addict. The addict is exactly what it sounds like. A narcissist who uses drugs, gambles, food, or sex, or whatever else they find pleasurable to find fulfillment. This kind of narcissist will often, as the rest, encompass qualities of the other narcissists we talked about, but not always. Sometimes they're completely, openly selfish, and other times you'll find that they're willing to steal from you, trick you, or otherwise scam you and anyone else they know and love, or claim to love, just so they can get their drug of choice. This is a very dangerous narcissist, because the addict often deals with dangerous people. And because they don't care if you get your rent paid or you feed your kid, they'll steal your last dollar if it means getting a fix or whatever it is that makes them feel good. A lot of codependent issues arise when an addict is involved. Finally, we're going to talk about the victim narcissist. Y'all know who I'm talking about now, don't you? The victim is also called, in some cases, the covert narcissist. This is a master manipulator, but they differ from other narcissists because they almost seem to be introverted. Sadly, for a poor me kind of narcissist, it all comes down to the one thing, and that is that they actually hate themselves. They think it's going to be possible to, like, hate themselves better somehow. Doesn't work that way. But they continue to demonstrate the behavior that they loathe. And even though they do that, they're powerless to change it. They don't control their own thoughts. What it comes down to is that their deep inner self is not okay with the person they've become. They judge themselves more harshly than they judge other people, believe it or not, or at least more harshly than other people judge them. But they certainly have a high standard for almost everything in their life. They quietly stick to their unreasonable standards to the best of their abilities, happy to secretly look down their noses at anyone they deem unworthy, lesser than them.
How can you know if someone is just damaged and is able to heal? Let's talk about that. It's got to start with their willingness and effort. They have to want to heal, and they have to be willing to acknowledge that there is something wrong.
They would need to identify and overcome their core wound, heal it, dig deep down and find out exactly what it is that's stopping them from being a normal, healthy person, what it is that's stopping them from having empathy for other people, and then heal that problem. And then learn empathy again as though they were small children.
Why do we take this? Well, we tolerate this kind of abuse for a few different reasons, and you might be a little surprised to learn why, but here's the thing. Often, when we end up in toxic relationships with narcissists, we have also been raised by them, or at least deeply affected in childhood by some form of abuse or trauma. And many times that does come from a disapproving or controlling parent, or even a directly abusive one. Or in some cases, our parent might just have been really neglectful of our emotional and even our physical needs. But in any case, I talked about this in a recent video, so I'm gonna insert a really quick clip for you right here to fill you in, and then I'll be right back to explain exactly how this is connected to why you might have ended up with a narcissist. So take a look at this. There's a theory that might explain everything, including the way narcissists behave in relationships, as well as how you fit into all of this. It's called attachment theory. Attachment theory basically helps us to understand our relationships and how our relationships with our mothers could affect us and our lifelong development, and even our relationships with others in really profound ways. In psychology, attachment theory, as we know it today, was first originated in 1958 when psychiatrist John Bowlby recognized the importance of a child's relationship with their mother. It turns out, he realized, that our emotional, social, and cognitive development are directly affected by our attachment to our mothers. There are four primary attachment styles, including secure, anxious, preoccupied, dismissive, avoidant, and fearful avoidant. If you've ever met a hopeless romantic, you may have been talking to someone who had the anxious, preoccupied style. This person desperately wants to be connected to others. They crave the emotional intimacy that comes along with relationships. The only problem is that this person also has this idea that they want to jump ahead in the game, even if their partner's not ready for it. So they're likely to say, "I love you," a little too quickly, and they might push ahead in the relationship even when there are red flags everywhere. They need constant approval and they need reassurance from their partners. They feel anxious if they don't get those things, and they doubt their self-worth, probably because they need others to validate them. And when their sort of clingy behavior pushes away their partners, well, they might feel like they were right all along, as in maybe they really are worthless. They have a positive opinion of people around them, their peers, but not so much of themselves. Now, these people's parents may have intermittently met their needs, as in they were loved and cared for, but not on a consistent and predictable basis. Interestingly enough, this kind of person develops when their parent seems to need the child to meet their own emotional needs. So their mother might have been the type that thought to herself, "Well, nobody loves me, but if I have a baby, at least I'll have someone to love me." It doesn't work that way, but once again, you can see exactly how this might carry on throughout the generations. This brings me to the dismissive avoidant attachment style. This is where you might actually find a narcissist. Someone with a dismissive avoidant attachment style certainly appears to be emotionally independent and is likely often a little bit afraid of committing to a relationship with a single person long term. So they have commitment issues, right? They would have had parents who were either not around a lot or were negligent in their care in other ways. They might have been ignored or abandoned or undervalued in childhood. They felt rejected. They they felt not good enough, they felt unwanted, and one or both parents might have been completely absent for this person. Their needs may have been partially served, but not fully. For example, maybe they got plenty of food and they were bathed on a regular basis, they had clean clothes, but nobody held them, or at least not often enough. They might also have been rejected by their peers as they got older, and they might have lived their lives feeling just not good enough entirely. This would leave them afraid to trust people in general, and as a result, they might be really likely to be dismissive of other people. They tend to cover up their insecurity with a sort of false sense of self-confidence. But when someone is dismissive avoidant, and they manage to find a secure, loving relationship, and they take the time to work through their own issues, well, they actually can manage to have healthy relationships. But unfortunately, for most narcissists, they don't develop the emotional maturity to do that, and they stay stuck in that attachment style. Let's talk about the fearful avoidant attachment style. Now, this person, they might always be dating the wrong people for them. And on the flip side, they might also end up rejecting people who might be a really great fit for them. It's kind of an interesting thing. They might find themselves feeling kind of normal in unhealthy relationships, where they feel the need to earn the other person's approval. And they feel scared or they feel threatened when something seems too good to be true, or when things are going toward a bigger commitment like marriage. This person's attachment style might lead them to actually sabotage a really good relationship in some cases, maybe because they are afraid it will end and it might leave them feeling devastated. They struggle with jealousy and with distrust in relationships, even when it isn't warranted. This person probably grew up with parents who made it really clear that they were either unwanted or that they were not acceptable as they were. They can sort of be like a walking conundrum. They desperately want emotional intimacy, but they also push it away. They want to be in a committed relationship with the right person. They actively seek out the opposite, or they avoid relationships altogether out of a fear of straight up rejection. Now, psychologists say that this kind of attachment style can be kind of a combination of the dismissive avoidant and the anxious preoccupied attachment styles. They also say that it's a result of dealing with a lot of trauma or loss in childhood. Like the dismissive avoidant, the parents of this person may have been unable to fully meet their needs in infancy. They may have always, for example, been fed enough and wearing a clean diaper, but maybe they weren't held or interacted with enough, for example. They might also find themselves having really difficult relationships with their parents, or they might even become completely estranged from them in adulthood, as in no contact. Their parents may have been alcoholics or addicts or narcissists, and they may have been physically and or emotionally abused. Moving on. All right, now let's talk about why the narcissist chose you and how all this is connected. Narcissists seek out empathetic, highly intuitive people for a reason. We care about how people feel, and we are driven to action by their intense emotional outbursts. This is because growing up, someone taught us that in order to receive love, we needed to keep them happy by doing something. We either had to live up to their particular standards for us, and often those were impossible standards, or we had to stay out of their way, or we had to do whatever they told us to do, or whatever your parents' particular brand of needs and demands were. We learned that love was not unconditional, even where it should have been. And we learned that our value was not in our individual selves so much as it was in our ability to serve the toxic person in our lives. So we became people pleasers, and we learned that loving someone meant to do anything we could to make or keep them happy, regardless of the personal cost to ourselves and to our mental or physical health. We won't even get into the ways that this kind of ongoing trauma can affect us long term today, but I'll link to a recent video in the description below where I covered that in detail, and I'll also put it in the pinned comment for you. And let's not forget how easy it can be to love bomb us. As people pleasers, we are wired to want people to like us and to seek the best in everyone. What a combo, huh? We are willing to put up with being treated like we don't matter. And we were trained to literally put other people before our own health even, just to make them happy and to feel like they love us, even though clearly that's not the case. See how that might make for an ideal source of narcissistic supply? In case you didn't catch it, and just to remind you, the people who taught you that you weren't lovable unless you served them and met all of their demands, they lied to you. They were wrong. Actual love does not require you to give to the point of physical illness, or to put your own mental health on the back burner, or to always give in and do what the other person wants, even when it's against your moral, ethical, or personal beliefs. Real love does not require you to give until you're completely drained and get nothing back for it. While a real love relationship sometimes might look like 40-60 or 70-30 in certain situations, the average ratio of give and take should be pretty close to 50-50. The bottom line on the difference between healthy and unhealthy narcissism is that healthy narcissism is self-focus, self-confidence, self-interest, and personal drive, but these qualities must coexist with a healthy concern for others and the ability to genuinely empathize with them. Unhealthy malignant narcissism and NPD involve the lack of emotional and compassionate empathy and concern for others, combined, of course, with an unhealthy amount of self-focus and entitlement. And of course, this type of narcissistic person is secretly quite insecure and very troubled in some cases, but you may never know that unless you look beyond the smoke and mirrors. So what do you think? This brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, do you know a malignant narcissist who displays these types of behaviors and who doesn't display healthy empathy? How have they affected you and your life? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right there somewhere, so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.